Hi, I'm Marlena, and I want to welcome you to Marlena, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where for about the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-666-7926. Come on in, sit down, take your shoes off, give me a call, won't you? Hello, I am Marlena. Happy Memorial Day to you if you are living in the U.S. And our esteemed Dave Williams tells me that it's also a holiday weekend in the U.K. So happy Bankers Holiday to you. Gosh, that sounds interesting. I think I'll have a Bankers Holiday. Anyway, happy holiday to you if it's a holiday weekend wherever you are. And if you have to go to work, oh, in a few hours, my heart goes out to you. Anyway, we are going to be with you for 2 hours tonight once again, and this is a format that does seem to be working out pretty well. So if you're listening to this program at any time other than Sunday night in the U.S., 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, or a very early Monday UTC morning at 1 in the morning, you're listening to a repeat. So just put your feet up and grab your favorite beverage and your favorite friend or both and have a listen. I would like to bring my guest in tonight. This is someone that I am just delighted to bring to the Marlena program. He has become a friend to me in the last number of years. And after sitting in his committee last year, watching how they work and how he guides the committee, I also not only felt that Jeff Tom is my friend, but I was extremely impressed with how Jeff Tom makes a very long and difficult job an awful lot of fun. Welcome to Marlena, Mr. Jeff Tom.
Thank you, and thank you for those kind words, although I think it's more my committee that guides me.
Well, I do recall that the hostess Twinkies played a significant part in I was delighted when you sent me a note asking to come on and talk a bit about the resolutions process. And so my hope is that we'll be able to talk about what is the committee, what is the process, etc. Let me give out the number, and folks can give us a call here. We don't have the line open yet because I want to give Jeff a bit of a chance to talk about kind of getting us going and steering us, but the number to call will be 866-666-7926. So, Jeff, how long have you been chairing this Resolutions Committee?
I think this will be my fourth year.
Wow. And what all is involved, first of all, as the Resolutions Committee chair? What kinds of things does one do as the chair?
Well, I guess before I should get into that, I should say what the resolutions process is for those who aren't aware of it. And basically, resolutions, and it's the reason I like it, the reason we're here in ACB is to get things done on behalf of blind and visually impaired people. And by adopting resolutions, we decide on a national level what policies and what issues we are going to support or oppose. And I think that's really the meat of what this organization is all about. And that's what resolutions are. Basically, it are statements of what we believe in and what we want to have done during the year ahead.
And how many people serve on the committee?
Well, it varies from year to year, but it's usually somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 12.
Do the same people generally return each year?
Generally, but we always try to get an infusion of new blood. And we had a couple new members last year, and they're going to be back again this year, and that's always good. And I hope that we have at least one new person again this year, because we always need new people to serve.
If someone is interested in serving whom do they contact?
Well, they should contact me and probably also contact President Gray, because he has ultimately he decides on who's going to serve on these committees.
Now, and I do want to get into the resolution process here in just a bit, but the committee, I was fascinated last year to watch you work. I mean, certainly in my years of being a member of ACB, which are actually close to, 30 now, I've sat in many a resolutions committee meeting, and I've seen what the committee does. But, you know, I hadn't done it for a number of years, and I think I had a different eye on it last year in terms of seeing how people work and the number of hours that you guys work. You guys are pretty much meeting daily or nightly during the convention, as it were.
That's correct. I'll just go over the schedule briefly as to how it usually works. And I want to say that our meetings are totally open. And I encourage any of you to come to one or more evenings and contribute to the degree you would like to. We usually start meeting Saturday night at 9, and then we have a meeting Sunday after the session is over. And then we meet Monday through Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and then we have a last meeting on Thursday. And we usually go till it varies, but, you know, around 1. Some chairs used to go a little later than I do, but I don't have quite the stamina that folks like Michael Byington and others did. So,
yeah, because one of the key duties that the chair has is to present the resolutions to the convention.
Yes, well, what happens in a nutshell is that we get resolutions from various sources, state affiliates, special interest affiliates, and individuals. They come and if we get them ahead of time, as we frequently do from some states, especially my own, then we try to assign them to one or more individuals, and they can even work on them ahead of time with the appropriate state or special interest affiliate or whoever is presenting them. If not, we work at them during the convention. And we always try and have the person who came to us with the resolution or some representative come to the meeting at which that resolution is being presented, because we don't want to make changes to it and adapt it to ACB's needs without making sure that it comports with the intent of the resolution as it's presented to us. In fact, even resolutions that the committee might vote to oppose, we quite frequently try to help draft it in the best way possible for the person who is presenting it to us.
And I watched the committee struggle with that last year in that, there were some resolutions for which there was not someone present. And I was just tremendously impressed at the concern with which you and the committee really looked at the resolution or the resolutions and making them as clear as possible, assuming that your understanding of the intent was in fact the intent of the crafter of the resolution. So it's really important that if you can't be present, that you make sure that there is a human person who can be present. And, you know, I know people have said, well, the resolutions committee, when they're going to consider the resolution, well, they could call. Well, you know, that might be, depending on your time zone, 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, where you are.
If the chair doesn't notify you, then the chair has not carried out his responsibility. But even saying that, if you know you're going to have a resolution that's coming up, it's always better not to allow me to screw up, but to make sure that you call me ahead of time so that we don't have any problem But it really is my responsibility to try and get a hold of someone from the affiliate, and hopefully I do my job in that regard.
Are there ever resolutions that do not come to the floor?
Sometimes. The presenter will decide to withdraw it, or sometimes it will be combined with another resolution that is close to it. Sometimes they're withdrawn for reasons such as the fact that it's decided by the presenter after we go through it that there's not enough information, so we're going to look at it next time. We had one last year on a testing issue. I can't quite bring it to mind at the moment, but it was some sort of, it wasn't law school testing, but it was another type of testing. And we decided, I think it might have been GRE, and we decided that we need to look at it a little more, and the presenter agreed. The committee doesn't have the right to not allow something to come to the floor. That's a decision that has to be made by the presenter of the resolution.
So that differs from what I understand of the National Federation process. I think, and maybe someone within the NFB could straighten me out if I'm wrong. But as I understand it, our resolutions committee, and you just confirmed that, does not have the right without the crafters' agreement to say this is not going to come to the floor. But I think that in the Federation, the committee can make that decision. Do you know?
I'm not sure, actually. Yeah.
The number to call and the line is open is 866-666-7926. We are visiting tonight with Jeff Tom, who is the chair of the ACB Resolutions Committee. And if you are listening at any time other than 9 to 11 Sunday night Eastern U.S., 6 to 8 Sunday night Pacific U.S., or 1 to 3 Monday morning Universal, it's a repeat. So, all right, Jeff, I've got a resolution, and I want to submit it. What are my steps?
Well, the best way is to get it to me in any format possible. Obviously, the preferred format is by some sort of email, by some sort of, computer technology, because it's easier for me to convert it. But we certainly take it in Braille or print or on tape. We want to make sure that every resolution has its day before the committee and ultimately on the floor of the convention. And that's why I said a minute ago, even if it's a resolution that the committee might decide to vote in opposition to, we try to make it the best resolution possible for the crafter.
So I don't have to be a genius at writing a resolution.
No, absolutely not. You can submit an idea to us. In fact, I often urge people to do so as soon as possible, because if we get it, say, 2, 3, 4 weeks before the convention, we can work with you, one or more of my committee. In fact, we have a conference call every year, and we'll have one next week, where we'll try and get together and look at some of the resolutions topics that we have already been given and try to assign them so that before the convention, a little bit of the work can be done. I have to do a little crowing about my own state. Actually, I don't know whether it's crowing or not because it's more work for me. But
it could be barking.
California also, yeah, it could be that too.
It could be barking, yeah.
It could. California always sends us usually 3 to 5 resolutions a year. It usually leads any other state, but we have them from all over the country, Oklahoma, Florida, Iowa, Hawaii. And this year, again, we have probably 4 to 5 from California. So we always get some in advance, but we encourage you to do that if at all possible. Usually, by the way, I should note, usually, and we haven't set the deadline, but historically, and I don't see any reason for it to change, but historically the deadline is Tuesday night of the convention for submitting them to me or to some member of the committee.
Wow. So I can go all the way up to that Tuesday night and still have time to submit my resolution.
That's right. I mean, we realize that some topics aren't fleshed out.
Like the one I submitted last year.
Well, that's right.
Who would have known? Who would have known? Yeah. Huh. So talk to me a little bit, if I want to try to write my resolution. Maybe I want to do more than just give you my idea. I want to try to write it. So what are the tenets of a resolution? What do I need to sort of think about?
A resolution basically has two parts. The first part are called whereas clauses, and they are basically statements of fact that basically state the problem and what can be done to solve that problem. But they basically set forth what we're trying to do. And then the resolve clause, which basically tells what we want done. We may be telling our officers or our staff to do something, or we may be saying that we want a letter sent to somebody, or we may be condemning something, or we may be asking for legislation, whatever. All over the lot as to what we might be doing, but that is done in the resolve clauses. So basically, we're trying to separate the resolution into what the problem is and then what we're going to do.
Okay. So I would write all this whereas, and then talk about what I want done.
That's exactly correct.
If I submit a resolution as an individual, and let's just say for the sake of discussion, Washington State submits a resolution as a state, does their resolution carry any greater strength than mine, or is an individual's resolution considered exactly the same as a state's resolution?
It doesn't matter. What we try to do, if the topics have similar problems that they are dealing with, we try to bring both presenters together at one time so that we can merge them into one resolution, or if they can't be, that they can both be presented and everybody be aware of what's going on. But sometimes there are even resolutions that are absolutely contradictory or that may have asked for a completely opposite result. And, of course, we even try to make sure that everyone knows ahead of time what is going on when we get opposing points of view like that.
So if you have opposing points of view, how do you present that then to the floor?
Well, it depends on obviously what the presenters of the resolutions want to do, but it could be that we would present both resolutions and that can sometimes cause a problem, but the committee can vote to take no position, or they can vote to agree with one of them and not the other. The committee has that option, but that's only the committee's position, and the floor can do whatever it wants and quite frequently does.
Yes, usually. without sort of wanting to stir up all the stuff, I can't let this interview pass by without talking a bit about last year and the interesting and controversial resolutions that you had to deal with, and the one involving President Gray. I just wonder, gosh, how. Certainly, we know the outcome, but how was that for the committee? That must have been an extremely difficult time.
Well, it was, just like I think it was for the convention as a whole, but we tried to, as we do with all resolutions, make it as well crafted as possible and as clear as possible so that the and as valid as possible so that the membership could vote on something. And, in fact, I remember we had help from outside the committee on crafting it. last year to make it the best resolution possible, not because we were supporting it or opposing it, but because we wanted it to be clear for the membership to vote on, because that is one of our most important functions.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that the way in which it was presented and certainly the way in which it was crafted, no matter how one voted, I think that no one could have any disagreement with the clarity of all of the resolutions. But, you know, that one was a particularly difficult one to struggle through on no matter what side you sat. It was a tough one. So I don't think I would have wanted to have your job last year.
Well, you have to take the difficult resolutions with the easy ones. I mean, that's part of the job.
Yeah. Yeah. The telephone number is 866-666-7926. If you have any questions for Jeff about the resolutions process, how to get him submitted, et cetera, this is the time to call. And, if not, we'll just keep chatting on here for a bit longer. Jeff, what do you do other than ACB? Who are you?
I am an attorney for the California legislature, and I mostly edit other people's work, which is, I have to admit, more boring than doing it yourself. So
what is an attorney for the California? What does that mean?
Well, what I do, or what my office does anyway, is we write the proposed laws that the legislature is going to look at, and we also write legal opinions for individual legislators. They might ask a question about whether a particular law violates the United States Constitution, or they might ask a question about, you know, maybe whether somebody can get Medicaid benefits under particular circumstances, and we'd have to render them a legal answer. So those are the sort of the two functions that I mainly participate in.
How long have you been doing that?
Oh, I just got my little state plaque for my 25th year.
Whoa.
So I don't think longevity is earned. I think you just essentially get it.
Whoa.
But nonetheless, oh yeah, and I got a tie tack to go with it.
Oh, hey, now that's cool.
Which I don't wear.
All right, so then that takes me to another question. I know we're sort of off resolutions, but I always think it's kind of interesting to talk to my guests about sort of who they are and how they got there. 25 years ago, man, we didn't have the technology for you to be able to go out and do all this research and whatnot. How did you get there?
Well, you mainly had to use readers. In fact, in my job, I still have to use readers for some things because, unfortunately, my editing, a lot of it has to be done not online. It has to be done on the printed page just because of the particular way my office works. But hopefully that won't always be so, and it shouldn't be, but it is. So, you know, in the old days, it was readers, and nowadays it's just a combination of the use of computer technology and sometimes readers.
Okay. Whoops. We're having some telephone. There we go. Are you still there?
I'm there.
Oh, good. Okay. Every once in a while, something fluky happens with my phone here. And, but you would say that you still use readers, but the technology obviously has made it somewhat easier.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've used a computer for probably, to some extent or another, probably 15, well, even more than 15 years.
Huh. Did you start off with the Arctic Vision type programs?
Boy, I can't even remember what program I first used.
It's awful to get old, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, it is.
Well, now let's just take this topic a little further here. What about law as a career today for blind folks? Is it Is it still a reasonable thing to look at? If I'm a kid and I'm, you know, kind of graduating from high school or whatever, is it a reasonable career to examine?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there are blind and visually impaired people graduating every year from law school and going into different aspects of the law. There are blind lawyers in just about every aspect of the law that I can think of, everything from, you know, copyright to international law to corporate and contract law to public interest. You name it, I can probably think of somebody that does it.
Are there, I've always wanted to meet, and you could probably arrange this actually, but I've always wanted to meet and interview a blind trial lawyer.
Oh, you just have to come to one of our AAVIA meetings at the convention.
Well, there you go.
And there you find a number of blind trial lawyers.
You know, I read all these books, you know. I mean, I read books of no socially redeeming value, absolutely no value at all. But they capture my feeble-minded interest. And I love books about attorneys, you know, and I love the courtroom dramas. And I often think, God, I wish that someone would write a reasonably accurate book where the attorney is blind. I just think that would be very cool.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever read one.
Yeah.
Well, it would surprise me that there is one somewhere, but I've never read it.
Well, maybe
we can get Mr. Grisham to write one.
Hey, now, wouldn't that be?
Yeah.
We could have called it Blind Justice, but that's going off on Tuesday, you know, or Monday.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. It truly is. Well, all right. So I think we've got the resolutions process pretty well covered. And
I might. If you want, I can tell you some of the topics that have already come up this year.
Yeah, okay, good. I was going to ask you that, actually, and wandered off in my feeble-mindedness to something else.
Sure. These are mainly from California. Again, I shouldn't keep referring to that because people are going to call me parochial. But since I am president, I guess I need to do a little something about
Yahoo!
Spouting off for my state. a year or so ago, and this is one of the most embarrassing things I have ever done, a year or so ago, a resolution which was passed by California that I forgot to introduce last year.
Oh, no.
And so it has been told to me in no uncertain terms that I better not forget it again, and I will not. Urging affiliates, essentially, or at least our affiliate, is trying to engage in public awareness on all the problems that are created by Write on Red, which is almost goes without saying. We all know how many accidents we've almost been in because of somebody turning on our green light. And so that is one of the topics that is going to come up. We also have, and this is a topic that we've come close to looking at in a slightly different context a couple of years ago, but we have a resolution seeking a national exemption for 911 calls. Frequently, you can get an exemption, say, if you call within a certain area on your wire line, but you can't get an exemption if you call, say, another state or in some bigger states, even in another area of the state.
Oh, do you mean 411?
Yes.
Oh, you said 911.
I'm sorry. 411.
I was just thinking, okay, now clearly I'm missing something here.
Yep, 411.
Okay.
We had another resolution passed this year that would ask ACB to enter into discussions with the broadcast industry to see if the industry would come up with some awards for various types of video descriptions, such as TV and movies, things like that. Sort of along the lines of the award that was given in the context of Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Another resolution which is coming to the convention, dealt with the requirement by RFB&D, Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, that you need to purchased a key.
Oh, yes.
To use anybody else's digital audio player.
Gall, yes. Oh, gall. I keep meaning to do a program on that, actually, and to try to bring somebody from RFB&D and then somebody else on to really debate and discuss that, because it's, oh, gall. Can the show host say she thinks it's a royal pain in the butt to have to...
Well, that resolution will certainly come to the floor in some form. Now you never quite know exactly how a resolution from a state or special interest will morph once it gets into the committee. Obviously, we want to make sure that, as I said earlier, we don't change it in such a way that it violates the intent of the drafters. But on the other hand, frequently, because that resolution may have been drafted for a particular state's concerns, it may look totally different by the time it comes to the convention floor in ACB. So these are just some of the topics that are coming up this time. Another topic that might come up, it's not something that we have a resolution on, but it's something that we've sort of kicked around a little bit, is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has ruled that very recently that they are going to allow various types of therapy incidental to physician care, but one of the therapies that they're not going to allow is low vision, vision type of therapy. And so this is one item that may well come up this year.
Wow. You know, sometimes I wonder how people arrive at the decisions that they make. I mean, why wouldn't you allow low vision therapy?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong person.
Yeah, I know. I'm preaching to the choir here, brother. All right, so here's a question. If I submitted a resolution last year and that resolution failed, may I bring it back this year?
Oh, absolutely. Every year is a new year.
Hmm. Okay. Wow. All right. That's something I didn't know. I guess I'd never really thought about it. You know, I mean, it's just usually if it fails, it fails. And then I just hadn't thought that it might be able to come back again.
It's interesting. Sometimes topics keep recurring because circumstances slightly change. For example, we've had resolutions on accessible voting for two or three years in a row because we've needed something just slightly different from what we had the year before.
Sure.
And other times you might have a topic one year and you might not see it again, well, forever or for 5 years or whatever. Hmm. But there are certain topics that in one form or another we see just about every year. Randolph Shepherd vendors usually have several resolutions that they bring up because there's always issues of one type or other that affect that program. So there are some issues that we see. Senior services, senior blind services seem to pop up every couple of years, such vital services as they are. So different types of library service related issues, of which I suppose you could classify RFB&D in the broad context as one of those.
You betcha.
Yeah, come up. So there are some types of issues that we see a lot. And then there are some, as I said, like we've had resolutions, for example, on trying to get a Louis Braille stamp from the Postal Service, which was sort of a one-time issue. We had one last year applauding Alabama and the U.S. for having the Helen Keller Quarter. So, you know, you just never know what you'll see from year to year.
Huh. Interesting. Very interesting. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to coming in and watching the committee at least one of the nights that you meet. Both Gary and I, we came away and we both sort of looked at each other and we said, you know, that would be an interesting committee on which to serve. And then we both looked at each other again and almost simultaneously said, what are we, nuts? You guys work so hard.
But it's a hardworking group.
It really is.
I really appreciate my committee. We have people from all over the country, from Washington, D.C. to Washington State and Texas to Ohio. I mean, they come from everywhere, and they're a really hardworking and committed group. But we also have a lot of fun, too, so.
Yeah.
Or we try to.
Yeah.
But there is sort of one issue which I would like to address because
Please.
It's been brought up several times. People have asked, give a little background, for those who don't know, when constitutional amendments are offered in ACB, we try to get them put into, and it's a process that I don't have anything to do with. We try to get them put into accessible format so people can read them. They're in Braille and large print and all that, so people can get them. And that is not done with resolutions. And people have asked, you know, why can't we do this? And there are a couple reasons that we don't. The main reason is, well, two. One of them is that a lot of them, of course, don't come in till sometime during the convention. But even a bigger reason than that is, unlike constitutional amendments, resolutions change so much between the time that they come to us and the time that they go to the floor that if we gave a particular draft out, it might be totally changed by the time it comes to the floor.
Sure.
And frequently, it won't come to the floor until it will come to the floor the very day after we've worked on it. And there realistically isn't the time to get 30 resolutions, put into Braille and put into large print. The press room would probably go nuts if we tried to that obligation upon
them. Yeah.
So
I was just sitting here trying to imagine how that could conceivably happen, and boy, it would be tough.
But what I am going to try and do, what I was urged to do last year and what I am going to do a couple weeks before the convention, is all the topics that I know we're going to be looking at, I'll put it out over the leadership list, and I'll ask people on that list to put it out onto some of the other lists and try to get it disseminated as broadly as I can so that as many people as possible know some of the topics that we're going to be discussing. I'm somewhat concerned that this is somewhat limited because doing it over via computer list, it doesn't reach a lot of other people who don't have that kind of access. And I feel I could come up with a good way to solve that problem, I would. Maybe there's a way early in the convention that I can come up with a list or something. I don't know. I haven't figured that out. But that's something that at least we've given some thought to, and people have asked us to think about. And so that's sort of an ongoing problem.
And if you, I'm on the leadership list, but if you also would direct a copy of that to me personally, in case I miss the leadership email, I will record something and put it up, and perhaps we can do something with it on ACB radio as well.
Okay, I'll send you a copy.
Yeah, and, you know, and add another thought. Early in the convention, you could put something on that convention ear number, which for folks who don't know, what the heck is she talking about, the convention ear? If you've never been to an ACB convention, we have a daily newspaper, but we also have a recorded line where key things are placed, and everybody knows the extension to call, and you can listen to the ear. So I don't know if that would be of any help there.
Yeah, that seems like a good idea.
Yeah. See, I'm not even on the committee.
There you go.
But you let me eat a Twinkie last year, so I felt like I owed you something back. You know what I'm saying?
Well, as I say, it's a very hardworking group, and we really enjoy the input from people outside the committee. So we encourage you to come and learn. And we've had one or two folks that have sort of listened to it, and then they've asked to be on the following year because they've liked it enough. So
yeah.
If the, on the other hand, we also have some that say, oh, man, this is too much. I never want to deal with this again. So.
Well, it's a fascinating process. It truly is. Now, is it too late for people to request to be considered to serve on the committee?
If someone really wants to do it, I wouldn't say it's too late. I would say they should, you know, contact Chris. And if they basically, I should tell listeners how it works. The majority of the time, the committee, well, somebody will come up with a draft of a resolution and submit it, and sometimes individual members of the committee will even write it if we have a topic that we need written. But what happens is, somehow or other, I will convert it and put it onto my Braille note, and I will read it line by line, and the committee will suggest and make changes to it. The committee doesn't actually have written copies in front of them because the process changes so quickly and happens so fast that we haven't figured out a good way to conquer that problem. So you have to be a good listener, and you have to be willing to open your mouth and contribute. And I've got a bunch of folks who, on both those counts, really know exactly what they're doing, and they aren't shy. So that's essentially how it works. And we work through our resolutions line by line, and as I said, we work with the presenter to come up with a finished product. So if you have, you know, good writing skills and good ability to sort of think on your feet like that, and you enjoy trying to make policy for the organization, then I would urge you to consider, certainly if you want to talk to me first about the process, and I'll, obviously before I'm done, I'll give out my contact information. So,
And what about, it's obviously not too late to submit the resolution.
Oh, no. As I said, the deadline has historically been Tuesday of the convention. So.
Okay. All right. Why don't you give out your contact information?
Okay. I'll give out my cell phone because that's probably the easiest to get me on. My cell phone is 916-995-3967. And I'll repeat that one more time. It's 916-995-3967. And my email is js, as in Sam, Tom, T-H-O-M, at Comcast.net. So that's jstom at Comcast.net.
And I'm just writing that down. Okay, and because I didn't have my file open when you gave your cell phone, you want to give it to me again?
Sure. It's 916-995-3967.
Okay, great. All right. Well, this is fascinating. I really encourage people to at least come and watch. You know, it's truly, truly a fascinating experience. At least I found it so. And it really, the resolutions truly are kind of the nuts and bolts of the organization, wouldn't you think?
Well, I like to think so. I think they're the most important thing we do. Otherwise, I wouldn't go through the sometimes agony of the late hours and everything. I just think it's so important, and that's why I stick with it. I mean, you know, the past chairs of this committee have been some of the most articulate and important members we have, such as, you know, Paul Edwards, our past president, mm-hmm. and Mitch Pomerantz, our second vice president, mm-hmm. and Michael Byington, the mm-hmm. previous chair. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of an honor for me to serve in that particular role.
Well, I remember years and years and years ago coming to resolutions committee meetings, and Scott Marshall was chairing, and he back then, I mean, you did it with a brailer. And I think, golly, whoa, I don't know how any of those guys, you know, who've done it in years, way years. I think Dick Seifert's done it. And I just don't know how those people did it without the technology, because it truly is, as you say, you read a line, you edit the line. You read the next line, you edit. Oh, wait a minute, go back and, well, no, wait, I wanted to change that 4 lines ago, because what we just did 4 lines hence changes what we did 4 lines previously. Oh, my God, it's just amazing.
Well, from what I heard, they used to stay up till 4 in the morning and get up at 7 o'clock and start all over again. But I don't know how they could do that. I can't. But I would also encourage people who are interested in this type of process. Many states, not all of them, but many state affiliates have do adopt resolutions of their own. And I think it's a good thing for people to get involved at the in that process at the state level so that they can learn a little bit as well if they've never done it before.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Now, let me ask you just to clarify here before we wrap everything up. If I'm not coming to the convention, I can still submit my resolution. But what do you recommend that I do?
Well, if you're not coming to the convention, I would submit the resolution to me. Someone from the committee will almost certainly, if you get it to us ahead of time, will almost certainly contact you beforehand. But it's a good idea to let us know that you're not coming. And if possible, designate, find someone who can come to the convention on, come to our meeting that is going to be there on your behalf. If not, then it's important that we try to, you know, talk to you ahead of time, because, as I said, the object of our committee is, one of the objects anyway, is to make sure that we do not distort what your resolution is attempting to do.
Well, this has been a fascinating bit of time here spent with you, learning not only about ACB's resolution process and how the resolutions truly are kind of the nuts and bolts, but also learning a bit about you. I mean, you sort of have Mr. Resolution written on you nationally, and I just thought that it was important to kind of give a face to who you are. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be on. I hope that people have learned a little bit more about the process, and perhaps it won't seem as intimidating after you've been able to understand it a little bit better.
How did people find out where the Resolutions Committee will be meeting in July?
It'll be in the program. I can't remember the exact suite number.
Gosh, you already had that? That's amazing.
Oh, I think I heard what it was supposed to be at one point in time, but I don't. But it'll be in the program. It always is. And we do announce the deadlines at the convention. And so we try to make the process as open and transparent as possible. And we encourage suggestions for the process, as I was saying earlier about the idea of trying to give people a chance to provide more input. If you have suggestions that you think we should undertake to make it better, please let me know.
Okay. And one sort of last committee-type question. Is there a size limit to the committee?
I don't actually have an answer to that question.
Well, there you go.
We've never put a specific size limit on it, although I don't know that it's ever been above 12 people, let's say. But
yeah.
I can't say that in the past it hasn't. I've only been involved for maybe 7 or 8 years.
Well, and practicality probably mandates that 12 people is...
I think that's a pretty big group.
Yeah, yeah. When, especially if you get 12 wordsmithers.
That's right. We do, however, give everyone, and I keep saying it's going to include the chair, but so far I haven't taken this. everyone one night off. And most people take advantage. Some will go to the showcase, and some may go to one tour or another. But one night off, it really helps because it can be really a pressure cooker and a real challenge to get through the week. So
yeah,
that's one thing that we try to do.
Yeah, especially by Tuesday, I would say. I would be looking for my night somewhere around Tuesday. Well, this has been fascinating, Jeff. Thank you so much for coming on, especially on a holiday weekend.
Yes.
I mean, that's
commitment. I've had a relaxing one. I hope that all the listeners have as well.
Well,
and I look forward to seeing you, Marlena, and all of you in Las Vegas.
All right. And I'm sure we'll be popping into that committee and causing trouble like we did last year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, why not? All right. Thanks, Jeff. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. You're listening to Marlena on ACB Radio Mainstream. And we're going to play some music.
Wow. You sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Hey, who's that sad little scrap of paper?
You really want to know?
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm what we are.
Gee, Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience and courage.
I guess. I mean, I got this far, but when I started, I wasn't even a bill. I was just an idea. Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said,
"You're right, there ought to be a law."
And he sat down, he wrote me out, and introduced me to Congress, and I became a bill. And I'll remain a bill until he decides to make me a law.
I'm just a bill. I'm only a bill.
You know, it is. And I'm one of the lucky ones, because most bills never even get this far. And if they don't report favorably on me, I'm going to die.
Die?
Yeah, die in committee.
Bill, you're up!
Yeah, it looks like I'm going to live. And I got to go to the House of Representatives now, and they're going to vote on me, so.
So if they vote yes, what happens?
Well, then I go to the Senate, and then the whole thing starts all over again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and if they vote for me on Capitol Hill, well then I'll talk to the White House that are waiting on high. I'm just a bill, vote the president inside, and I'll be all out of hope and freedom, don't you think I'm just a bill?
You mean even if the whole Congress says you should be a law, the president can still say no?
Yep, that's called a veto. And if the president vetoes me, I have to go back to Congress and they vote on me again. But you know, by that time,
it's very unlikely that you'll become a law. It's not easy to become a law, is it?
Nope.
But how I hope and pray that
he signed your bill. Now you're a law.
Yeah, he signed your bill. Now you're a law. That's the folk implosion, and it's called Only a Bill. It is almost the beginning of the second hour of the Marlena program, and I would sure love to hear from you out there, or else I get to do an hour's worth of a monologue. And I don't think we want that. 866-666-7926 is the number. Lots to talk about this week. First of all, I thought that was fascinating, that the interview with Jeff Tom, really kind of examining ACB's open and transparent resolutions process. You'll forgive me while I move around in my chair here to get a little more comfortable. It's very hot in my office / studio. We have air conditioning in the house, but I have this gargantuan desk. And when we put it in, we didn't have air conditioning. And I have several computers in here, and they're all sort of going. And so when we put in the desk, we didn't have air conditioning. And so I said, oh, well, don't worry. We can set the desk on the register on the floor. It'll be all right. And now we have air conditioning. And whoa, these computers keep this room plenty warm, but the fan is going. And if Gary, the board guy's listening, maybe he could bring me a glass of water. That would be lovely. Anyway, it was fascinating to kind of hear the resolutions process of ACB. And that's one of the things about ACB of which I'm very proud, is that we are an open organization, and folks do know what's going on. I think that's great. I think that's, sometimes we get bogged down in discussion of matters from the floor, but sometimes democracy can be a royal pain in the butt. But I would much prefer to be annoyed because of the length of time or the repetitiveness of the topic than to be wondering kind of where we're going, what are we doing, what's happening, if you will. So, all right, that said, a lot to talk about this week. There was a major rally in Washington, D.C., at which I think there were upwards of 400 people with disabilities in attendance marching to protest some of the proposed and probable changes the current administration in Washington would like to make to our rehabilitation system. And we may get some calls about that. If you were at that rally, I would love to hear from you. And what was it like? What's your perspective? I know that folks also met afterwards with their congresspeople to try to garner support for not making some of these changes. And so perhaps we'll hear from someone about that. It's also the beginning of summertime in the Northern Hemisphere. Yay! Whoever thought? Golly, I didn't think it would ever get here. And I'm real curious to know, what are your plans? Since the phones are so quiet tonight, you may all be out doing your summer plans. I don't know. And I think I hear Gary the board guy. Oh, and we have a phone call. Let's bring this caller in. Hello there. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. It's Rosie.
Hey, Rosie. How you doing?
Fine. You wanted to talk about the rally, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't there, but I heard the broadcast from Association of Blind Citizens.
Uh-huh.
And, wow, I mean, it was really quite an event. It was about time that NFB and ACB pulled together on this issue.
Yeah, and I think...
And I was really shocked, however, that ACB was, like, not in the forefront.
Well, I don't know too much about that, but I know that Melanie did give quite a rousing speech rally. Yeah, yeah. So beyond that, what do you mean that ACB wasn't in the forefront?
Well, it was like NFB planned it and ACB, just went.
Ah,
that was the impression I got from a friend of mine.
Oh,
that NFB was doing the whole shebang. But then when I heard Melanie, and I thought, oh, good, ACB, you know, is there. But
yeah.
I don't know how much planning they did. But I know that a friend of mine was supposed to go to Washington but got sick, but NFB was paying for the bus and everything, and she was going from Philadelphia to there.
Well,
and but unfortunately she got sick. But I did hear the broadcast, and you know, people do have to get in contact with their senators and congressmen and really lay the pressure on them.
Now, and so you heard it from the Association of Blind Citizens in Massachusetts, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, they're a great
group.
He
has a radio station there.
Yeah, yeah. There, I did some promos for them last year at the convention. They purchased some time on ACB Radio, or they made a contribution to ACB Radio, and so I did a couple of their promos for them last year. They're a great group, aren't they?
Oh yeah.
They really keep you Massachusetts guys informed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm planning to schedule an interview with him and talk about Boston Light of the World also.
Now, what's Boston Light of the World?
Boston Light of the World is an organization that was started by Lutheran, well, now it's called Lutheran Blind Missions. But before then, it was the Missouri Synod that wanted a blind ministry, and David Andrus, who was in St. Louis and working for the Synod under Lutheran Blind Mission, I guess, decided to start centers to reach out to blind people with Jesus' love through, you know, through the gospel. We have dinners every month and an event every month, and not only does it include Bible studies occasionally, but it includes, at least in our center, talent shows, accessible game night.
Cool.
CBS night.
Very cool.
Whatever we can, you know, bring in.
So, and that's independent of any of the two consumer groups?
Yes.
Very cool.
This is run by the Lutheran Blind Mission Society now
in
St. Louis.
Are they're the people who do the Braille Bibles?
They do,
Oh, no, that's the workers.
No, that's Lutheran Braille Workers.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They do other stuff. In fact, there was a controversy between the two organizations. It ended up being that they, Lutheran Braille Workers does the Braille Bibles all over the world. And, Lutheran Blind Mission does the various lesson plans, and they have conferences once a year at a retreat center in St. Louis, which the directors, which I happen to be, attended every year. I attended the directors' conference and two other conferences, and now they're starting the process all over again. It was called the Leaders' Conference.
Well, let me ask you this question. I asked the Lutheran Blind Worker person whom I met at CSUN this question, and I must say I was disappointed in the answer, and I certainly don't mean any ill words toward the Lutheran Blind Workers, but I asked, you know, when I was a little girl, I used to get the Braille Bible. And I used to love it because I don't know how they bound it back then, but oh, it had these wonderful metal rings to it, and oh, it was
wonderful.
I
thought you were going to say strength.
It had these metal binders instead of plastic binders on them, and
yeah.
And it was just great. But anyway, and my other line is ringing here, and that's it's not a show line. So, if you're calling about the show on the other line, you need to, can't even hear who it is. Anyway, and I wish it would stop, and it just did. Okay, good. Anyway, I was, you know, talking to her about that and saying how I always used to sort of love how those books were bound, and they kind of had double rows of spirally things on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked her if there was going to be any thought to producing the Bible electronically, and she very unequivocally said no.
No, I guess Lutheran Braille Workers does not do this. However, you can get Bibles online. You can get the Logos Library online, which Paul Hunt from Lutheran, well, the Christian Blind Institute, wrote Josh scripts for, which were really good.
But not all of us are Jaws users.
I know, but that's what he did, and he happens to be one.
Yeah.
I think there's also accessible, you know, Freedom Box?
Right.
On the Information Center, I finally got Freedom Box. I'm really excited about Freedom Box. I think there's, on the information line, David Baharian told me that there was a Bible that you could read. And I think Alexander Scorby's version is there, and I think there's got other dramatic, you know, the Zondervan version of it is there.
Great.
Zondervan,
great. Yeah.
Which is more of a dramatic version.
All right.
You know, people speaking, acting, whatever.
Sure. All right. Well,
so anyway, that's
good stuff.
They don't do that, which is disappointing.
Yeah. Well, not everybody can do everything.
Because their whole emphasis is Braille.
Yeah.
To send overseas. And
sure.
She and I are planning to go to Brazil in January.
Great.
To start an outreach center in Brazil.
Great. Well, I wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you. And we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, keep me posted.
Time runs on.
All right.
And thank you for talking to me about it.
Oh, well, thank you for bringing it up. And call me again.
I will.
All right,
bye-bye.
Rosie. Take care. 866-666-7926 is the phone number. And if you want to talk about anything, we're kind of here for the next little while, 50 minutes thereabouts, give or take, one or two, up or down. And would love to chat with you about the rally, about what your plans are this summer. Let's see. Do we have a call? Let's see. I can't tell which line that is. Hello, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, it's Sue. Just a second. Lynette?
What?
No, I'm trying to get to a three-way with Lynette, so I can get Lynette on, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just, darn it. Hold on.
That's okay. It's, you know. Uh-oh. I hope we didn't lose her. We'll find out. Sue, this is Sue from Washington.
Okay. How do I get?
Well, I don't know.
Let me try to call you back so I can get, because I don't know how to do this three-way. It worked the last time I did it.
Okay.
Or let me try, can I do this? Let me try Lynette.
Sure.
Hang on.
Sure. This is live radio at its best, right? That's Sue Amateur from Washington State, and we actually, Washington State, sent two people to the rally, Sue Amateur and Lynette Romero, and it seems as though Sue was listening, and she wants to talk about the rally with bringing Lynette.
Marlena?
Yes.
Yeah. Lynette? Yes.
Hey,
okay,
Lynette,
works.
Welcome to the Marlena program.
All right. Thank you.
So you guys were at the rally.
We were. And I'm going to go out in the garage because I have the radio going so we don't have a delay here.
I never thought I'd send Sue Amateur to the garage.
Yeah, it's a bad time. Yeah,
there
I've
she
been
goes.
Sent to the woodshed. But
yeah, well, and I bet you were sent to the principal's office a lot, too.
We won't tell about that.
Oh, I don't know. Some night I'm going to give you a couple of scotches and tape record the whole story.
Oh, Lord. There was one time for me,
too. Uh-oh. Oh, boy. This is getting interesting.
Is this too echoey out here on the radio?
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
So I'm going to sit back and kind of, I'd love to know what was this event? What was it like? What did you do? I think that, you know, for those of us who are old enough, a rally, we know what that is. But I think many of my listeners are, you know, particularly the younger folks who listen to this program may never have participated in anything like this. And I'd like them to know from the perspective of two good, strong advocates. What was it about? Why did we go, and what did you do?
Well, let me start out by saying that we got a call from our national office about the first part of May saying we need to come to D.C. in force to try to save the Rehabilitation Services Administration, which is the entity that governs federal programs that serve blind people for job placement. And what is happening is that the Bush administration, without any input from Congress or the consumer community, is recommending a number of things that could be very harmful to the rehabilitation structure in this country. And so a number of organizations, actually 48 to be exact, said we need to rally in front of the Department of Education to tell President Bush and Secretary Spellings that we don't like what they're proposing. So fortunately, the Washington Council of the Blind was able to send two people, myself, Sue Amater, and Lynette Romero, we're both board members, back to Washington, D.C., to not only attend the rally, but to go and meet with our congressional delegation. And I have to say, you know, that we worked in concert with the National Federation of the Blind of Washington. We were able on Wednesday, the 25th of May, to meet with an aide for Senator Cantu, and we actually met with Senator Murray, and then we met with six congressmen, and then the other NFBW folks were going to meet with the remaining three congressmen on Thursday and Friday. But I think it's, you know, it's oftentimes we spend a lot of time, you know, saying how we disagree with the two organizations, and we certainly have that right. But I think it's also good to say that when there's an issue that really impacts blind people and we feel the same way, we can work together. So I thought that was a real positive thing.
So what happened at the rally, Lynette? Had you ever participated in a rally like this before?
I have participated in a similar situation that happened where we were asked, at one point in time, I was an NFB member, and we were asked to go down to protest with the NFB, and I was involved in a rally then, and it was specifically about a gentleman that was a member of the organization, and it involved his situation where he was asked to leave the airplane because he refused to leave when they asked him to leave because he was sitting in a space that was the exit row. And he was asked to leave, and so we were asked to go and petition against the situation.
So this wasn't your first rally experience,
no.
Then? Yeah. For someone who's never been to a rally, either one of you maybe could answer this. For maybe some of my younger listeners who've never been to a rally, what should they expect? What happens at the actual rally?
They should expect sore feet.
and no.
Well, you know,
sunburned faces.
Right. We did a lot of marching around. We carried signs. You know, we had a lot of chanting and that kind of thing.
And sore arms, mind you. Because of the situation of holding the signs and literally the wind blowing and us having to try and hold these signs up and literally, navigate the wind.
And, of course, most of us, if you're a cane user, primarily use your right arm, so you can't change arms. And I guess if you're a dog user, you probably use your left arm.
Yeah, you can't change arms there either.
So your other arm gets tired, but you know, we marched and chanted. But I think the real thing that was really neat is that there were 48 sponsoring organizations, cross disability. They were blind, deafblind, wheelchair users, brain injured. But also we had some representation from labor unions who represent the employees whose positions in the Rehabilitation Services Administration are going to be cut. So it was a real cross kind of representation. And so around noon, after we had marched around for a long time, then we started the program, and Jim Gassel from the National Federation of the Blind did the program. He did an excellent job, and I think he was very fair and even-handed in how he recognized folks. The first speaker was Melanie Brunson from her own ACB, and she did a very strong speech with, you know, 48 people to go through. There were a lot of people to recognize. I thought the other interesting thing was that all of the Living Rehab Services Administration commissioners, and that's a presidential appointment, by the way, so that's, you know, it's a very, very high-level position, were there with the exception of one, and gave speeches, and they were both Democratic and Republican representatives. Edwin Newman was there, who was appointed from the Nixon administration. Robert Humphreys was appointed by Carter.
Yeah.
And then we had Dr. Schroeder, who, of course, was appointed by Clinton. And then Joanne Wilson, who had been appointed by the current administration, President Bush, and resigned in protest of the proposed reorganization. So they all spoke, and that was compelling, I think.
Can you talk to us a bit about, and I know you probably have other things to do with your Sunday night, so I promise not to hold you up here, but...
Well, you're going to come and do my dinner dishes, right?
Yeah, right. Oh,
good.
Let's see. They're going to be awfully crunchy by the time I get across the water. But anyway, can you talk to us a bit about what... Kind of just in brief, what are the issues about which people are concerned?
Okay. Well, primarily, and I'm going to read this off the fact sheet, I think, if I can find the right page. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to read this because I think it's from the ACB. I'll get it right, fact sheet.
One of those Bs.
Right. And our fact sheets were very similar, by the way, so that we were asking Secretary Spellings of the Department of Education to reconsider the following measures that, so that no citizen will be left behind. Promoting a vocational rehabilitation VR super waiver that would allow governors to raid VR funding in order to prop up a system of one-stop centers, which are largely inaccessible to people with disabilities, especially those who are blind and do not even provide the specialized training needed by people who are blind in order to achieve a positive vocational rehabilitation outcome. And I'll just say as an aside that, you know, this often happens where one program has a lot of money and people want to come in and raid those block grants because funding is precarious in other kind of governmental entities. The second thing we're objecting
to. Let me just stop you there. So, essentially, if this first piece that you read were to happen, then our quote unquote specialized blindness rehab services would be mushed in with general rehab. Is that right?
Right. Well, not even general rehab. It would be like into employment security. So we'd be mushed in with everybody looking for work.
Yeah. So disabled or not, blind or not, we'd all, and who knows what the caliber of the person helping us might be.
And they wouldn't have the specialized expertise needed to look at jobs for blind folks.
Right.
So the second concern we have is that they're proposing closing regional offices of the Rehabilitation Services Administration that provide assistance and oversight to VR agencies and grantees. And they believe they can do that out of Washington, D.C. We've seen that done in education and other places, and it doesn't work. I think we need the input in our region, and I think we need the expertise that comes from these folks to help us in monitoring and assuring that we have quality programs for blind folks.
And I just want to make a comment about that from maybe a slightly different perspective, but You know, in my many years on this planet, I have worked as a consultant on many federally funded grants. And one of the things that really kept me, if you will, honest, just kind of using the phrase, is knowing that my regional RSA person was overseeing this grant, and he or she was going to come in, and because he or she's in my region, it could be any time. It could be every month. It could be every 6 months. It could be every week. And I think that, without kind of sound getting on the soapbox here, but, you know, for an administration that's so darn concerned about money being wisely spent, oh boy, if for no other reason than that, I can't understand why we would close.
We can't either. That's... And the other sad thing is that of the 65 jobs being cut, 43% of those positions are filled with persons of disability.
Yeah.
And this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Seriously. You know, we need to all, as blind advocates, speak out against this. Seriously, and this is our opportunity as advocates to go and do this, be a part of the rally, which was incredible. This was an opportunity. This was an opportunity for us, as, you know, Dan Fry was there, Mike Freeman was there, you know, we were
Judy
all
Jones.
There.
Everybody working together.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were all working together. Yeah. It was an opportunity. Yeah. It was so exciting to have the opportunity to do this.
Is there a number three on the fact sheet?
The third thing you're proposing is reorganizing RSA to eliminate the Division of Blind Services, which is the office which currently administers specialized training and employment programs that are vital to the ability of people who are blind and deafblind to live independently and become gainfully employed.
And now there's an idea. I mean, hey, we're already, our unemployment rate is 80%. So
right, let's cut the office.
Let's
yeah.
wipe out the office that knows, oh, golly.
And the other thing we're concerned about is that, as I mentioned before, the commissioner of RSA was a presidential appointee confirmed by the Senate, and they're proposing that they reduce that to a director appointed by the assistant secretary of the Department of Education. So basically it's stripping the structure of the kind of visibility and viability that we've had, and that's our concern.
Now, since you've gone through that fact sheet, which I really am grateful that you had on hand to do that. And I want folks to know that we didn't really plan this. I mean, I did briefly touch base with Sue earlier and said, hey, I've got open forum in my second hour. And, you know, if you guys feel like calling in about the rally, feel free to do so. But we didn't, this isn't anything we've planned. So I especially appreciate you both being able to do this and come on, and Sue having the fact sheet. So since you've kind of gone through the sheet, the next question, of course, is if people want to get their voices heard, how do they do that now?
What we're suggesting is that you call, fax, or email Secretary Spellings with a copy to your congressman. Expressing your concern, especially if rehab has played a part in your life, which for most of it has, say what that's done and how this could impact you. And you can email her at Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-R-E-T, dot Spellings, S-P-E-L-L-I-N-G-S, at ed.gov. And then, of course, if you want to call, the number is 202-401-3000, and you can leave a message. But I think we need to let the secretary know that we are not happy with these proposals that she is doing along with the administration. I think Congress is listening to us. A lot of the times when we went into the offices, they said, oh, we're already aware of this issue. So it wasn't something they had never heard of. So,
did you have the sense that this is a fait accompli, or is Congress open?
Congress is open to putting a lot of pressure, I believe, and they're in the process of doing both a letter from the Democratic and Republican side to Margaret Spellings, and, you know, I'm sure copies up to the White House. So I think there'll be a lot of pressure brought to bear, and, you know, hopefully there was a lot of publicity in the Washington Post, in the Washington Times. The previous commissioners that I mentioned earlier put an ad in the Washington Times on Thursday asking people to listen to what they had to say. So that's pretty compelling, I think.
Well,
and there was an article in the Longview Daily News that we were there.
Well, I think it's great that you guys were there, and I appreciate your coming on and giving us this report. And if you'll kind of feel free to do so again as this progresses, I would appreciate it.
Well, I think it's good. I think that the more information we can get out, if people want to get more information about what they can do or more background, you know, you can contact us. ACB National Office, or, you know, if you're of a mind, the NFB National Office, whichever you're comfortable doing. There's a lot of information out on the list from Justice for All, et cetera. I think we heard earlier the rally is, you can listen to the rally. The rally was awesome.
Well, I wish that I had been able to go and broadcast it for ACB Radio.
Wouldn't that have been a hoot?
Yeah, my heart was with you guys. I tell you, being an old hippie, the key word there being hippie, not old. Thank you very much. But and having participated in numerous rallies, demonstrations, and whatnot, you know, when you look at it on the face of it, you think, well, it's a bunch of people marching around, but you know, it's a clear and strong avenue for having your voice heard. And I'm just...
And one of the things that Lynette did, and she can maybe add to this, she gathered testimony from a lot of blind people about how rehab had impacted their life, and we took that to each of the congressmen and senators that we met with and left it so they could read it. And I think sometimes that's more important than a fact sheet.
Yeah,
that was... people.
Yeah, and Lynette, since I participated in that, I was especially appreciative that you took the time to do that, because putting a human face on our advocacy is sometimes just...
Marlena, you were one of the people that spoke out against it, and this is important that we are all standing up. We are all speaking out. This is our opportunity to do something at this point in time.
Well,
and please
and,
continue, every one of us.
And putting that human face on advocacy, I think, is a good deal.
Seriously, you know, this is our opportunity now, and please, every one of us need to continue to speak out.
It only takes 5 minutes to call your senator and your congressman, so please do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, ladies, for coming on my program. And
Marlena, thanks for giving us the opportunity.
All right, and keep me up to date with what's going on. We'll have you on again.
All
right.
All right.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
866-666-7926. Very critical to blind folks here in the U.S. I don't care if you're 13 or 93, you're going to be impacted by changes of that magnitude to the rehabilitation system. And margaret.spellings@ed.gov is the email. Hello, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Good evening. How are you? It's Dave in Visalia.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Fine, I think. Are you planning? Oh, we finally decided we will go to the convention, even though we've, or at least for some of it, not
oh, cool.
all. Of it.
Woo-hoo!
Some time, but
great.
I hate to be the person of contraire here.
Well, that's all right. You can be.
But you know, I hear all this, and first of all, I have seen, you know, all being honest, the NFB was the one who really got billing on this rally. I didn't. The only thing I saw about ACB at all was Melanie Brunson's name. Period. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
There was otherwise not one, not even a paragraph about ACB at
mm-hmm.
all. On our side of things, our side being ACB side, we said that there were, 1,200 people there. The newspapers seemed to say like 400, so it's got to be somewhere in the middle, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, and you said it yourself, we still have, you said 80% unemployment. It may be lower than that, but it's not much. I'm as of you know, I'm one of the unemployed as of a couple of years ago. And I guess the obvious question is, what has rehab been effective? And I think the answer is arguable.
Yeah, and I can't disagree with you, but I also don't think that the answer is to split it up and fragment it even more than it is now.
Well, what is the answer then?
Well, I don't know, but
Then maybe fragmenting is an answer.
No, but if you'll let me finish my sentence, I don't believe that fragmenting is the answer.
But like me, you don't know that.
No, I don't, but like you, I have
an
opinion.
We also know that it hasn't worked up to now.
Right, but like you, I have the opinion.
So if we assume that it hasn't worked up to now, then we have to say, why are we fighting for a status quo that hasn't done the job?
First of all, I can't patently agree that rehab hasn't worked. I think that there are many instances in which rehab has worked. I do think rehab has room, like anything, for improvement, and I don't think that fragmenting it and making it possible for you, Dave, to walk into some employment center where, Happy Harry, who's never even worked with a blind person before, will suddenly be the guy who's going to help you find a job, is going to do anything to improve things.
Well, it's interesting you say it, because actually that's what I ended up doing. I walked in and wasn't Happy Harry. Actually, I forgot what her name was. Because that's what was available at the time. I don't know the answer either, but I tend to think maybe entrenched bureaucracy is not always the answer. And I don't know, maybe this is a chance for the people who work in this field to really regroup and say, okay, this is what we need to do. I don't know. I feel a little bit uneased, shall I say.
Well, I agree with you that rehab, aspects.
Now, the other thing I think is that the services that, like for senior blind, homemaker services, that kind of thing, I think that does need to be compartmentalized into another area, because a lot of those folks who are newly blind or who are elderly, maybe both, they're not going to be wanting
sure.
to find employment. They want to learn how to do their daily tasks.
Sure, sure.
And I think we've made the real mistake of knobbing all that together, and they end up being really shortchanged, I think.
Well, I don't know about other states, but I will very proudly wave the flag for Washington, in that Washington State has a really clear and separate and vital independent living services program for senior blind folks, and they're not even sort of put into that whole mosh of, we're going to give you a counselor and the same person's going to help you, and he's going to help the 18-year-old kid looking for a job. So, as I say, I don't know how other states do that, but Washington does, I think, a pretty darn good job of separating at least the senior blind folks out. So I don't know, but you raise good points.
Okay.
All right.
All right. You take care.
All right. You too. Give
Bye-bye.
Pam my best.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. And, Dave does raise good points. I mean, I don't agree perhaps to the extent that Dave feels that rehab isn't working, but I do agree that there are parts of rehab that need to be looked at and that should be looked at, and that I hope as a result of all of this, you know, that folks are kind of looking at, golly, you know, how can we make ourselves stronger? But I sure as heck can't agree that sort of making one big mosh of a place to go for everybody, whether you have a disability or not, is going to improve our employment situation as people who are blind. It's about 37 minutes past the hour, give or take. And if you're listening to this at any time other than a Sunday night between 9 and 11 on the East Coast and 6 and 8 Pacific and a Monday morning early on a UTC day 1 to 3, it's a repeat, and you should just put your feet up and enjoy the controversy. Oh, my gosh. So, other stuff going on this week. What went on with me this week? Well, I've had a pretty busy week. My company has partnered with an existing company, and I'm working pretty directly in the field of adaptive technology right now. And, oh, golly, there's so much to learn from that side of the fence. And struggling with QuickBooks. Oh, my goodness, QuickBooks. Oh, don't you love it? Hi there, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
This is Timothy.
Hello, Timothy. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. You're new, dear.
I'm doing great. Now, you're from Canada, right?
That's correct.
Yes.
Nova Scotia, exactly.
Yes. What's going on up in Canada this week?
We just came over a big, huge storm that we had in one of our towns called Lunenburg, or more or less Bridgewater, was flooded.
Oh, my gosh. I hope not. I hope you weren't close
One of the bridges in Bridgewater were completely knocked down because of the raging rivers.
Oh, dear. Well, I hope you are all right.
Us here in Halifax, we're fine.
Oh, good. So
we're supposed to get some sunshine tomorrow, finally.
Oh, well, that's good. We've had lots
for
of nice...
14, maybe 15 days of rain?
We've had lots of nice sunshine here in Seattle this week.
I know. I've heard that you guys had warmer temperatures there.
Yeah, we had to turn on the air conditioner.
Not good.
So what's on your mind tonight, Mr. Timothy?
I just wanted to say hello, and I am enjoying your show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And you call me anytime just to say hello.
No problem.
All right. Well, have a lovely evening up there. Now, I used to know, let's see, there's a ship. Did we talk about this? Maybe we did. I took from...
Who knows?
Yeah, from Bar Harbor, Maine.
That's actually from Bridgewater.
Oh, okay. Well, I boarded it at Bar Harbor, Maine.
Okay.
And,
it was originally from Bridgewater. That's where it was built at.
Yep. Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, it's a great little ship.
Yeah, the Blue Nose is one of our favorite schooners. So
yeah,
it's actually Nova Scotia's monarch.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Nova Scotia's monarch, yeah.
Well, whenever I think about Nova Scotia, I always think about landing there in Halifax,
mm-hmm.
and we came off the ship, and there were people with bagpipes and kilts, and oh, it was just wonderful.
Yeah, that must have, a lot of them must have come from the Citadel.
Yeah, I don't
the
know.
The big hill, the Citadel, the big hill up in the center of downtown Halifax.
Yeah, well, I know that I walked up a big hill. I remember that.
And that must have been Citadel then.
It was a big hill. Well, listen, thanks for calling me.
No problem.
All right, call me again.
Hey, you should come back to Halifax again.
If I ever do, I'll let you know. We'll do a radio broadcast.
You never know. I got a computer here with a mic, so.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I'll get myself going with you.
There you go.
All right.
Have a good one, Timothy.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Oh, I loved Halifax. What a nice little sort of, I don't know if I would even call it a city, but it has quite a spirit about it, I think. I went into some of the little shops. Anyone who knows me knows that I would never travel anywhere far without going into a shop. Anyway, I went into some of the little shops, and I just had a feeling of very rugged people. You know, people who, you know, they could kind of withstand just about anything up there in Halifax, Nova Scotia. There was also a performer by the name of Bonnie Dobson. Oh, boy, if anybody remembers Bonnie Dobson, then you're as old as I am, and I'll meet you in the next rocking chair. But Bonnie Dobson, and she sang a song about Peter Amberley, and who was born on Prince Edward Island. Oh, would I love to have that song. But I think it's pretty well out of print, and too bad for me, I guess. I guess I'll just have to want it. Well, we have another caller. Hello there. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
It's Tim again. I just wanted to tell you the city has over 300,000 plus.
Oh, all right. I guess it is a city.
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you.
No okay. problem.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
300,000 plus. It doesn't feel that way. Well, and of course, I was there 20 years ago, you know, so there you go. There you have it. 866-666-7926. What's on your summer agenda? And what are your plans this summer? We're going to be traveling. Actually, I have to tell Dave Williams this, actually, since I think Dave's in the chat room. He'll find out right along with you guys. We're going to be away the weekend of June the 12th, which is 2 weeks from tonight. We'll actually be returning on June the 12th. And, depending upon what time we return, we may or may not be able to be here, but I have to look at the plane tickets. But we are going to Minnesota to Nikki Kobe's graduation. And how cool is that? Seeing somebody graduate whom you've known since third grade is very, very cool, since they were in the third grade. Hi there, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. This is Lisa Hall of San Antonio.
Hello, Lisa.
Yes,
the college
I've been
graduate.
Regularly, which is normally what I don't do.
But college graduate extraordinaire.
Yes, and I've been very busy updating my webpage. I've been working real hard for the last couple of weeks on that new contract, and got my webpage updated with all kinds of web accessibility and accessing accessible PDF documents.
Wow, good
but
for
I've
you.
I've been putting all of this together for the staff to use as my resource page.
Good for you. That's great.
Yes. And I would like to encourage, and I'm going to do the same thing, is to write to Secretary Spellings and contact send carbon copies to all your congressmen, and also sending carbon copies to the National Office of the NFB. And so I advise people to do that, because the more writing you put in, the better it's going to be.
Absolutely.
Because rehab has benefited me. If it weren't for that, I don't know where I would be. Because they assisted in funding adaptive technology that I needed to do this kind of work. And it makes a big difference.
Well, I think now is the time for people to make their voices heard through NFB, through ACB, whichever one you belong to. And if you belong to neither, that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
That's right.
You can get friends. You can get friends and families to write. It's real easy to do. It don't take but about 5 minutes to call and say you're opposed to the consolidation. I know it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's I think it looks pretty grim.
Yeah, I mean, it's real tough. I mean, you can imagine what it was back in 1940 when the organization started.
Sure, sure.
It's almost repeating itself.
Yep, yep. History does repeat itself, doesn't it?
Yes, and if anybody hasn't had a chance to understand the history of things, I would encourage people to read Marching Alone, Walking Alone, and Marching Together.
Or they could...
One of our 50th anniversary book
yep.
that was written.
And that's
available on the web.
And they can also read People of Vision.
Right,
which,
that is correct.
Yep.
And that way they can understand why we're advocating for what we're trying to do.
That's right.
That's exactly right. The Rehabilitation Services Administration is the only federal program of its kind, and it has been a big, I don't know how best to explain it. It's been a big part of our lives.
Yeah.
And getting quality training, and there are some places don't even kind of offer the kind of training that people should be getting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we should be promoting it wide.
It's critically important now for...
Yes, for today's employment. It is a requirement that you need to learn computer skills. It is a requirement that you at least have some college education. You know, I don't think it goes without saying that, you know, just so that you have a GED, a high school education, that should get you a job. Well, it takes a little bit more than that.
Absolutely, and especially if you're blind.
That's right. And
like it or not, that's the way it is.
People that are blind, you know, we have specialized training that we need, and we need to keep that going.
And, you know, I think one of the reasons, I mean, I do a lot of work in universal design and training.
Yeah.
And the sighted world is terrified of blindness. And so
that is correct.
And so when we go for an interview, the thing that's going on in their mind, whether we like it or they want to admit it, is, Oh my God. How could Lisa do that job? I couldn't do that if I was blind.
Yeah,
oh my God.
I've been asked before on job interviews, how are you going to get to and from work?
Right.
Well, it's none of their business how I get there, really, because usually that's my responsibility to deal with that.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And I don't really come out and tell them. I just give them the honest answer, and I talk about all the alternative techniques of how I would do it.
Sure, sure.
And you just have to be prepared on how you're going to answer the question.
And it isn't even legal for them to ask you that unless they ask everyone else that
question.
Right.
I mean, they're not really supposed to, but... Some of them don't have a slightest clue.
Well, I remember
what you should and shouldn't, you know, what you should and shouldn't ask.
I remember once being asked, and this is years and years ago, but I remember once being asked, since I use a guide dog, if they would have to lay newspapers from my desk to the elevator in case the dog had an accident. Now, that's just crazy stuff.
Yeah, I mean...
But
so, we as blind people, we have to speak up for ourselves. We're the one to take charge.
Absolutely.
And that's the way it should be. You know, blind people should be able to take charge. We should not have to wait on other people to do things for us.
Well, I appreciate the call, Lisa.
Thank you.
All righty, and good luck.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
866-666-7926. We've got a little bit under 10 minutes to go here on this week's Marlena program, and I've been very much appreciative of everyone's input tonight, and I think it is important to talk about some of these controversial issues. And, you know, typically the Marlena program is kind of a feel good, you know, everybody kind of hang out in the living room together type show. But there are issues of huge import about which we should be thinking. And this rehab stuff is certainly among them. So, anyway, as I was starting to say, we, Gary and I, are going to, and Madeline, are going to board a plane on the week, in the week of June 7th, and we're going to go out to Minnesota, and we're going to watch Nikki Kobe graduate from high school. And without embarrassing Nikki Kobe, I mean, why not, though? It's fun to embarrass Nikki Kobe. But Nikki has been, Nikki and her family have allowed me and Gary to be a part of their lives since Nikki was in the third grade. And we've been together, we've been through the, all of the stages of kind of, you know, the blind kid growing up with sighted kids and looking at that together and how that is and how that can sometimes feel. And then last summer she went to get her guide dog, and boy, I was so proud to see her graduate. And as I said, guide dog, my Madeline just wagged her tail, I think. But anyway, I was so proud to see her graduate last summer with Julio. And now we get to see her graduate from high school, which is just an amazing thing, just absolutely an amazing thing. So that's our first summer plan. And we'll answer the phone before we go on to the next one. Hi, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. It's Pam.
Hi, Pam.
I just thought I would say hello before I, toward the end of the show and before I got busy preparing our steaks tonight.
No, oh, yes, I'm starving. What time are they ready?
Actually, these are bigger. One of them is bigger than I thought. So we were just debating about, well, they're thawed now, so they have to be cooked. And I think I'm going to end up, I know I'm going to end up grilling them both. I have the George.
Oh, yes, the beloved George.
Yes, these are pretty thick, so it's not going to be the easiest thing I've ever done as far as the George, because I'm going to have to kind of hold the top of it and kind of sit on it until they sizzle down a little bit.
Ah, they will.
Or at least that's the only, have you ever found a way around this?
No, but I don't even do that. I just put them in and walk away.
Ah, well, if I see a piece of steak sticking out of the side, I think, oh.
Yeah, well, that's true. You got to make sure they all get in there. Yeah.
But I'm terribly conflicted about this rehab issue, because we see, you know, we have so many friends here that are not employed, as you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, what is the answer? And of course, we start asking those questions, and none of us, not you, not Dave, not me, not who knows who, have an answer.
That's right.
Now, what we, I think, possibly before they do, or if they're going to dismantle rehab, and I must, well, first of all, I have a criticism in that they tended to, at least in Florida, and that was my only experience, they had jobs that they thought you could do, and they were tried and true. And if you did, if you were college material, you became a rehab instructor or a teacher. If you didn't want to do that, they didn't know what to do with you. If you were not college material, you took dark room, which, of course, I don't know if anybody does dark room anymore, and vending stand training. If you didn't want to do either one of those, they didn't know what to do with you. They really discouraged, or there was clerical. Yeah, they really, and of course the telephone services, teleservices. I worked for Social Security for 5 years and absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
To the point where after 5.5 years, I said, 30-year pension is not worth it. I got to get out of here.
Well, I think, now this is just my perception, because like you said, none of us knows the answers. But it is my perception that rehab has changed a little from the days, because your experience was my experience back in the, you know, the 70s, that if you didn't fit into a niche, well, go off and go whatever. But I work with rehab now in a very different capacity, and I see them saying, okay, we've got job developers now, and we've got we need to be kept up with the state of the art of what's available equipment wise, and where we assess people now to determine that they're getting the right equipment, and you know, and that never happened, at least in my experience, back when I was a rehab client in the 70s.
Yeah, no, it didn't with me either. Actually, they did when the Social Security Training Program, and I always find that interesting to think back on that, because when it first came out, my mother read an article about it. I never thought I would go in there. I would be involved in it. What happened was there was a vacancy available, and they called and said, "You want it?" And I said, "Okay."
You know. And we may need to continue this discussion next week.
Uh-huh.
Because it's coming to time.
Okay. Well, the other thing I want to say, they said that blind people were good employees because they would never want to change. They were just so damn happy where they were.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Oh.
I've heard that. All right. Hey, let's continue this.
Hey, thanks a million.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. It is just about time for us to wrap up. We like to try to wrap up before the automation wraps us up. And I so appreciate that you were here this week, that you listened. We'll see you next week. And if the song is appropriate to you, let it give you a good message.
The song asks 9 questions. We feel that the answers to these questions could determine what happens to all of us in this generation. When we sing the song, we ask ourselves the questions, and we ask you, please, to do the same.